about Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt waters. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we're featuring A.J. Dudek, and he'll be answering your most important questions on drifting for smallmouth bass in Wisconsin tributaries. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask A.J. a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and your email address on the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within about 48 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with AJ about drifting for smallmouth bass in Wisconsin tributaries. Whether fishing for trout in the Rocky Mountains, chasing silver salmon in Alaska, or jumping tarpon in the Florida Keys, the Platte River Fly Shop online store has all the top brands you need to gear up for your trip. They are Wyoming's largest Sims and Patagonia dealer, keeping a large variety of popular items in stock year-round. You might even find a great deal in their closeout section, from rods and reels to waders and boots. And if you're headed through Wyoming, make sure to put the Blue Ribbon North Platte River Tailwaters on your bucket list. Log on to WyomingFlyFishing.com, that's WyomingFlyFishing.com today, and check out their store, or give them a call at 307-237-5997. That's 307-237-5997. And just chat with anyone there. They've got a very experienced staff in their fly shop and will help you with either guide services or products. So check them out, WyomingFlyFishing.com. Before we introduce AJ, we'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. For a drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to the Fly Fishing and Tying Journal. So you have two chances to win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage, which is at askaboutflyfishing.com, and look for the link under Michael's section that says click here to register, under AJ's section, I'm sorry, that says click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link, fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a $25 gift certificate courtesy of Front Range Anglers in Boulder, Colorado. And find out more about Front Range, go to frontrangeanglers.com, frontrangeanglers.com. And if you win that, you can redeem it in their store or in their online store as well. Now, here's how you can win. You must be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show. And the question is going to be something that AJ and I talk about during the show. You must submit your answer along with your name and your location in the text box on our homepage. And the first person that gets the right answer wins. And so use your best typing skills, take notes during the presentation tonight, and you have a good chance at winning. Our guest tonight is A.J. Dudek. And A.J. is the director of Excel Outdoors and First Adventure Fly Fishing in Appleton, Wisconsin. A.J. leads guided adventure fly fishing, backpacking, and hunting trips in the Colorado Rockies and in the Midwest. A popular speaker during the off-season, AJ travels and conducts clinics and presentations related to fly fishing and outdoor activities throughout the country for numerous groups. Communicating and working with new anglers through his guiding and presentations is a special passion for him, influencing and encouraging others in conservation and appreciation of the sport. AJ is on the pro staff for companies like R.L. Winston, Rods, St. Croix Rods, Scientific Anglers, Ross Reels, Blue Sky Furl Leaders, and Patagonia Outdoor Apparel. His first love is guiding for wild trout in the Rocky Mountain National Park and the San Juan Mountains. AJ is also an accomplished guide for Western River smallmouth bass and enjoys fishing for Lake Michigan carp and Midwest smallmouth bass. Well, AJ, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Well, thanks for having me tonight. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm excited to talk some smallmouth. It's great.
Yeah. So that was a pretty big smallmouth you sent me a picture of for your speaker's page. That was a nice looking fish.
Yeah, that fish almost taped out at about 20. My dad and I were were floating the day before Father's Day, and we had a great day and boated some beautiful fish.
Yeah, I'd say that's about the nicest smallmouth I've ever seen.
It's a beautiful fishery we have, for sure.
Yeah. So that was a Wisconsin fish?
Yep, that was a northeastern Wisconsin smallmouth, yes.
Good, good. Well, tell us a little bit more about smallmouth in general. Are they native to the U.S., or do they live on other continents as well? Or?
As much as I know, they are native to the Mississippi, upper Mississippi drainage, as well as the Great Lakes area. The Great Lakes themselves, you know, are phenomenal smallmouth fisheries. I'm most familiar with Lake Michigan and some of the Superior areas that we do fish. But, they are native. They're wild reproducing fish that we have, and it's an honor to be able to fish for them, not just because they're just a hardy game fish and just a really solid fish to go for on a fly. They're related to the panfish family, closely related to like a black bass, and they're predators. They're definitely eaters, aggressive. Oftentimes I equate smallmouth with predatory brown trout in the way that they feed, in the way that they take flies. So the similarities between brown trout and smallmouth are really interesting. And if you're streamer fishing for brown trout, a lot of the techniques, how you fish flies, will transfer into your smallmouth fishing.
Okay. You mentioned black bass, or some people call them largemouth bass.
Yep.
Now, they inhabit different kind of waters, don't they, or act differently in the same waters? How do you relate the two? I mean, because you're going to run into both of them, right?
You will. Smallmouth actually are a great indication of whether your waters are clean or not clean. You know, oftentimes you can pull a largemouth out of pretty murky water that most anglers would fish. Smallmouth need good oxygen, good food source, steady water temps, and so that's where we find most of our smallmouth. Very rarely will I catch a largemouth while fishing river smallmouth. They are in there, but mainly we're catching smallmouth and the occasional pike or muskie during the summer months when we're fishing for the smallmouth. And so I have found, over the years that when I'm fishing river smallmouth, I'm mainly catching those guys. Very rarely will I catch a largemouth. Now, on a lot of our resident lakes, they're full of largemouth bass.
Right.
Because they can sustain a little bit easier in water that is a little murky, a little lower in oxygen. Not to say, they're not a predator fish as well, but I think the smallmouth, like trout, need a healthy environment and a healthy river system to sustain and duplicate naturally. So it's nice to be able to have that up here in the Midwest.
Okay. Are they partial to then more moving water where largemouth can handle the still water?
Yeah, definitely. Just in nature of how they feed, they're eating crayfish and baitfish, things like that. And so the smallmouth lie a lot like a trout would in a river. They're not going to expend a lot of energy to feed unless they're aggressively feeding. And so we find those fish in riffles and pools, much like you would a trout, actually, hitting pockets, hitting edges, hitting foam line. Those fish are going to sit like trout would in water that produces good amount of oxygen and lots of food. And if they see something and they react naturally, they'll chase down a fly and they'll eat it aggressively. That's kind of what they're known for.
Yeah, they have a reputation, don't they, for being feisty character,
do.
Don't they? Yeah,
they
Why
do.
Is that?
I think it's just within them. It's just like a territorial brown trout. They're very instinctive. And one of the guys at Tightline Fly Fishing Company here in De Pere, Wisconsin, Bart Landwehr, always says that, smallmouth eat a fly like a fish should. There's no second guessing that this smallmouth is going to crush your fly. And sometimes we see these tanks that are so visual, and it's just awesome. It's awesome to fish like that. And seeing that the water clarity is pretty good most of the year, we get to see most of our takes. We get to see these fish eat those bait fish patterns and come up and eat our dragonflies and things like that. So I think for the most part, it's just instinctive. It's in their nature. It's what they do to survive. They have to be aggressive and eat. And it's like high alpine trout. You know, their season of eating, you know, is 3-4 months, maybe 5 months, 6 months on a smallmouth. And so they have to be opportunistic. So we find that oftentimes that if you place the fly and you fish the good water well, you'll be rewarded.
Yeah, a lot of those high country brook trout here in Colorado, sometimes, you know, you think to yourself, this isn't quite fair. Because they take about anything.
They'll tear the legs off your foam beetle all day long.
Yeah, you know, they don't really test your skills that much. But they sure make a backpacking trip. Can turn that into a gourmet meal at times. So.
Absolutely. It's a beautiful place to fish.
Yeah. What's the average size of the fish that, you know, your clients catch there in the Wisconsin area?
You know, the main rivers that we fish, you know, produce averages of, you know, maybe 12 to 16. You know, a trophy fish is going to run 18 to 20. We have seen 21s and 22s being just what we call toads. I mean, they're just big, big smallmouth. And then the females tend to be a little bit bigger than the male fish. And so we see a lot of that. And being that we're fishing in rivers, you know, but that fish, when it turns sideways in the current, a 14-inch fish is going to feel like an 18-inch brown trout. It's just the way that they're designed and how their body moves with the current and against it. And, you know, we do get 10s and we do get 12s, but since they're so predatory in nature, these fish are 16, 18s, and, you know, they grow about 2 inches a year. So if you catch a 20-inch smallmouth, that fish has been in that river system for 10 years.
Wow. Is that about maxed out 10 years in age?
You know, it's getting close. Rarely will we catch fish, you know, in that 21 or 22. It does happen every season where you see pictures of fish like that. But to catch a 20-inch smallmouth is a trophy fish. Mm-hmm. And that's a fish that's, like I said, it's been in the river for a long time. And definitely knows how to eat. It's really fun fishing for those guys.
What about some of the streams or rivers, these tributaries you talk about in Wisconsin? What are some of the more popular ones that people would know that are good for smallmouth?
Some of them start, you know, near Milwaukee, all the way up the coast. You've got the Sheboygan, you've got the Oconto, the Peshtigo. Can be great. Most of these rivers are actually tailwaters that are under dam control, whether it be an energy dam or just a man-made dam set up below one of our lakes here. And so it's nice. The water's consistent year-round, or at least in the summer is flowing consistently. Water temps are fairly stable. And so, you know, get on, you know, Google Maps or a gazetteer, and you'll notice these rivers pouring into Lake Michigan. And if it's going to be good water, there'll be smallmouth in there. A lot of structure, a lot of rock. You know, water temps that are in the 70s in the summer are going to produce fish for you. And, you know, kind of how we talked a little bit about, you know, fish are going to be in a river system that have food and have the proper amount of water, proper amount of oxygen, and structure. You're going to find smallmouth.
Well, just before, you know, we got on live on the air here, we were talking about an old river that I used to fish, Menominee up north. Now, I consider that a pretty good piece of water. I mean, that's even up where I fished in the upper part was a big river.
Yeah.
Now, by that standard, for me to just kind of visualize, are most of these tributaries that size, or are they smaller, or how small can they get and still hold, you know, good smallmouth fishing?
That's a great question. Some of them are that big as far as being wide. And then there's others that, you know, we walk and wade into that are, say, like fishing the blue and silverthorn or fishing the Big Thompson Canyon pre-flood this past year. You're going to find smallmouth in there. And they're in those pockets, in those riffles and plunge pools. And so we do a lot of just walk wade fishing too for smallmouth in a lot of our river systems here in Wisconsin. And Minnesota also has some great tributaries off of Mississippi, like the St. Croix and the Chippewa, things like that, that produce nice fish.
So fishing, you don't necessarily have to have a boat and just pick the right piece of water.
Right.
It could be good to go without a boat.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So you just kind of describe different fisheries. So, I mean, do you actually see, you know, we in Colorado considered a freestone-type stream. I mean, you don't really have freestone-type streams in Wisconsin, right? I mean,
we do have some. There's sections that are freestone in nature, but a lot of it is sandy sediment, and then we have big rock shelves that, through the glaciers that came through, you know, produced, you know, nice shelf systems where the fish can suspend off of. Early season, they'll be up on the shelves when they start spawning. And throughout the summer, as the water temperatures rise and the water actually drops, they'll hang off those shelves. Sometimes they'll be right in center river. And so, you know, it's a little bit different than your western trout water. But as far as reading the water, like you would a trout river, it's pretty much exactly the same in the sense of, okay, where are the riffles? Where are the fish going to be? What's the easy holding areas for these fish? Because like I said, most river fish operate on, hey, how am I going to feed easily here without using a ton of energy?
Yeah.
And I think smallmouth oftentimes work that way as well.
Okay, I've got a question came in on the Internet here, AJ. Phil in California says, are you primarily fishing rivers near where they enter the Great Lakes and where the smallmouth might move back and forth between the lakes and their river haunts?
You know, there are some lower sections that we do fish that produce nice smallmouth, mainly in the early season, pre-spawn, post-spawn. If any fish do travel up and spawn in the river because the water temps are warmer, they'll probably eventually move back to the lake after that post-spawn, kind of early June, middle of June period here in Wisconsin. But most of our smallmouth are actually more inland, maybe anywhere from 5 to 20 miles inland, we find our smallmouth. And if the river's deep enough, like I said, having those shelves and channels, it'll hold, and those fish will be able to winter in those areas just fine.
But some fish do go out to Lake Michigan for the winter? I mean, is that a normal?
Yeah. Yes, they would. Yep, absolutely. It's just a better place for them to kind of shut their metabolism down and kind of almost hibernate in a sense. They'll feed as needed, but you know, once the water temperature drops below 50 degrees, they're going to get into shutdown mode for the most part.
And they're doing their spawning in the streams?
Yes, they'll spawn. You know, we normally see our pre-spawn middle of May is when we start to see that water temperatures start to creep up around 60, 63 degrees. And for about 2 weeks, we kind of let the river sit, and those fish will spawn out, and pre- and post-spawn could be some of the best fishing of the whole year as far as being able to catch those really big females pre-spawn as they're eating a lot, getting ready to be on the beds, and then the males come post-spawn are very aggressive. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's one of my actually my favorite time to be on the river.
Okay, let's hold that thought, and we'll come back in just a bit to talk more about the seasonal aspects of smallmouth.
Sounds good.
Housatonic River Outfitters offers the finest in fly fishing products in Connecticut and fly fishing guides on the Housatonic, Farmington, and other waters. You have the option of wade fishing trips or drifting the river with their guides. In addition to the spectacular trout fishing, they offer guided fly fishing trips and spin fishing trips for warm water species. Please tour their website at www.dryflies.com to view the fishing products and guide services they offer in both Connecticut and Massachusetts. They were the first fly shop in Connecticut to offer drift boat guide services and have the largest established guide service in New England. To learn more about Housatonic River Outfitters, visit www.dryflies.com. That's www.dryflies.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with A.J. Dudek about drifting for smallmouth bass in Wisconsin tributary. If you would like to ask AJ a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Well, AJ, I always ask my guests at this point in the show what's going on in their fly fishing world. So what's happening with you out there in the Midwest?
Yeah, we've had a great summer season here up in Wisconsin. And about this time of year, oftentimes the smallmouth guys are thinking about migratory fish already with the steelhead and the brown trout fisheries that we have coming up here in a couple of weeks. Smallmouth fishing is still very, very good. Oftentimes, August can be one of the best months for fishing topwater flies. So, you know, fishing hardhead poppers, deer hair, foam poppers, things like that. We see a lot of terrestrials that hatch out, grasshoppers. We fish big Chernobyl ants, things like that on the river. And so for a western trout fisherman, it's kind of neat to see an 18-inch smallmouth come up and eat a popper like a trout would, really slowly, really investigate it, and then take it. So for me, this time of year, I love to go out and fish a lot of topwater, and at the same time, really getting excited for the fall fishing that's coming up here in the Midwest with our steelhead and then brown trout runs that we're going to be seeing here soon. And we'll still have another maybe week or two of really good smallmouth fishing. It really depends on water temps. We've had a cool summer here in Wisconsin in general. And so it's kind of been weird that way of days in the 70s. We haven't had a lot of 90 real humid days, but we've seen a lot of fish eat on top this year, and it's been a great summer for that.
And now you're offering guide services in that area, right?
Well, I work through a shop called Tight Lines, a fly fishing company in DePere, Wisconsin. I actually am not a vocational guide anymore. I run an organization, or actually a ministry, called Excel Outdoors in Appleton, Wisconsin. And we do a lot of youth programs, a lot of family-oriented things, using the outdoors as a way to build relationships with people. And just wrapped up an archery program for kids, and we've got a lot of fishing stuff coming up this fall. So that kind of keeps me real busy, but I do spend some time in the shop at Tight Lines. And those guys have been kind of the primary guide service in our area for the last 12 to 15 years, and just a phenomenal resource for anybody that wants to try smallmouth fishing on a fly.
What city are they in?
They are in DePere, Wisconsin.
Okay. And what's their website address in case people want to...
It's www.tightlinesflyshop.com.
Okay, tightlinesflyshop.com, okay.
Yep, tightlinesflyshop.com. And they've got a great smallmouth selection of flies and a lot of different YouTube videos on smallmouth fishing that guys can check out as far as technique and how we fish flies. A lot of fly time demos as well, so it's a great resource.
Terrific. Sounds good. Well, thanks for sharing that with us. Let's jump back in to our questions and try to investigate this more. So since you already started talking about the seasons, let's talk more about the seasons. Why don't you give us kind of a calendar year of smallmouth fishing, you know?
Yeah.
When we start, when we end, if we do end, so.
Yes. Traditionally, we see our pre-spawn fish starting to really spawn, you could say, and get ready for the spawn about middle of May. Ice out's going to happen sometime in April, and really smallmouth are water temperature fish. So, you know, as the water temperatures get into that 50s, low 60s, that pre-spawn ritual begins, and the females start eating really heavy, gearing up to get on the beds. And then after they're on the beds, the males will move on and guard the fly, and that's what we kind of consider the spawn period into post-spawn. So normally, from a guide perspective, we'll run trips middle of May, like I said, till about that first week in June. We'll let the river sit for a week or two, depending on where the fish are at. And then, we're right back on post-spawn, which, like I had mentioned before, you know, that fish that I showed you on your website there is probably considered a post-spawn fish. And we caught about 30 that day that ranged anywhere from 16 to 19.
Wow.
We didn't catch anything under 16. And that's just that post-spawn aggressive really starting to get into the pattern of where these fish are going to be holding and getting ready for summer, coming off of long winters, trying to put on some weight. And, you know, we transition then into early July where the water really stabilizes. Runoff, you know, is considered to be done, and the flows start to flatten out a little bit. Water clarity gets a little bit better, and the fish are into their kind of normal eating habits, depending on weather. And we see great amount of activity on the surface as the water temperature warms. Like I said, into the 70s is great. This year, the water was actually a little bit cooler just because of the cool nights that we had. And so the fish are sensitive to that, but we don't see a big fluctuation in flows. The flows are normally pretty standard come first week of July, and you'll see that till end of July, we start to see fish, you know, like I said, really aggressively eating on the surface because the water's warm, and they're gearing up for fall as well. And so they know that, you know, the snow's coming and they need to put on some more weight before the season ends. And normally we'll wrap up, you know, trips, we'll wrap up fishing up there middle of September is a safe bet. Not to say you couldn't, you know, walk weight and fish till end of September, even into October, because what'll happen is as the water drops, the fish, like trout, will cool up and kind of start staging for winter. And so, you know, that's something that we definitely, I look forward to the fall fishing for smallmouth. I really enjoy it. They can be really aggressive in those big pools and little deeper water ledges just because they're aggressively feeding. And we can catch a lot of 18s and 19s and 20s that time of year as well. So as far as a prime season, you're looking at middle of May to middle of September traditionally is what we're looking at within that calendar year.
Now, is there a legal season in Wisconsin, or is it just determined by the ice on?
Yeah, I mean, our trout season starts the first Saturday in March and runs till, I believe, the last weekend in September. First weekend in October. Fishing season starts in May. The early May is the fishing season opener. And we don't see a lot of guys fishing early season because pre-spawn in Wisconsin can be a variety of things from rain to snow to sleet to all sorts of weather. And the great thing about fishing smallmouth that time of year is you're going to run into pike as well. And in the spring, they can be really aggressive. You know, so we're fishing steel leaders in the spring because, you know, those pike will bite your flies off consistently if you're in a stretch of water that's heavy with them. And so we've landed some very nice pike as well. And like I said, some musky also here and there are in the river system.
Yeah, I remember that, you know, up fishing in the Menominee River, you never knew what you were going to get. I mean, back then when I was a kid, I was doing a lot of spin fishing. But,
yep.
You know, you'd get a smallmouth, you'd get a pike, you know, and up there you'd even get a largemouth once in a while, so it was,
yeah,
you know, kind of crazy as to what you might get. So
it is. It's a really beautiful fishery.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, good. Well, let's talk, as you just mentioned, steel leader. You know, let's talk about equipment for a minute. When you're, you know, and this might change, of course, with the season, as you just described, but what weight rod and line do you normally use to go after the smallmouth?
Yeah, you know, we're normally throwing 7 and 8 weight rods, 9-foot rods, for a variety of reasons. One, you're throwing larger flies, bait fish patterns, deer hair patterns. So flies that absorb a little bit more water are just bigger in diameter than traditional trout flies. And, you know, we're fishing the bigger fish in a river system that just yields big fish. And like I said, you get a 16-inch smallmouth on in a river, a 9'5", you possibly could land that fish, but either the fish is going to wear out and it's not going to be a good thing for them, or the rod's going to blow up on you. And so we've traditionally fished those 7 and 8 weights. I like an 9-foot 8-weight rod for 90% of my smallmouth fishing. I'll use a 9'7", maybe a 9.5'6" weight for a little bit more delicate terrestrial fishing, dry fly fishing. But 90% of the time, we're going with a 9'8" weight, you know, something that's got a fast action, that loads quickly. And I'll talk about lines a little bit, too, just because they are
Sure.
Paired together so naturally. Some of my favorite two lines that I like to fish is the real smallmouth line. It's an actual line made for warm water smallmouth. It's got a great front taper on it. And then the Scientific Angler's Magnum taper line is another go-to line for me, just because they're designed to throw big flies. And they float really well. They're dual color, so you can kind of tell where you're at in the line as far as loading the rod. Fishing for smallmouth, you can catch them anywhere from 10 foot off the drift boat to 40 to 50 foot casts if they're a little spooky. And so having a rod that loads quickly is important. And in smallmouth, much like, you know, drifting the Arkansas or the Colorado for trout, you're hitting spots. You're hitting, you know, certain pockets, certain riffles, certain areas where fish are going to be sitting and lying underneath structure. And so you need to be accurately placing your flies and quickly doing so just because you're drifting. And so I like that 8-weight paired with a line that's got a nice front taper. The Scientific Angler's GPX taper, that line's been around for a long time, is another great, nice front tapered, heavy tapered line. Leader to go with that, most of the time you're going to fish anywhere from an 8 to a 12-foot, 8 to 10-pound leader. And Rio and Scientific Anglers, you know, they both make a bass-specific line, so a line that's tapered for smallmouth. You can buy, like, Tiger Wire to tie on top of that if you're noticing, you know, a lot of pipes in the section that you're fishing. As far as gear and then reels go, a nice disc-drag large arbor reel is going to be ideal, something that's got good line capacity. Because we do put a lot of these fish on the reel, and some of these bigger fish are going to take line out. I've never been spooled by a smallmouth, but to know that, okay, my reel is going to perform for me, I can really put the fish on the drag and work the fish with that fighting butt on my 8-weight rod, that's really helpful. And you can fight the fish well and in a timely way. And so just some of your big game reels are perfect. Disc drag, at least 200 to 250 yards of Dacron backing. You could put 20 or 30 pound backing on that. Because a lot of the guys that fish for smallmouth in the summer are also fishing the flats of Lake Michigan for carp, which is basically, you know, freshwater bone fishing in a sense. So you need a reel that performs. You need backing that's going to hold up for you. And like I said, those fly lines that Rio and Scientific Anglers make for bass are meant for warm water, high-temperature style fishing, so they're going to last a long time for you and fish well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Yeah, that pretty well covers it, I think. Sounds good. And you're primarily using floating lines, I take
them? For the most part, we are. Early season when the water's high, there are times where we'll attach a 6 or 8 foot sink tip to the end of that floating line, and we're fishing crayfish, baitfish patterns down deep, even a lot of heavy trout-style streamers like Autumn Splendors or, you know, some of John Barr's crayfish patterns, Swamp Busters, stuff like that. I'll fish subsurface and try to get those flies down quickly. So, yeah, we do need to attach some sink tips sometimes. It's nice if you can have a spare spool that has a sink tip fly line or a streamer tip line, so that's nice to have, but you don't have to have it. You can get away with a 6 or 8 foot, 10 foot sink tip, and that big line, that big front taper is going to cast that and turn that fly over just fine. You won't have any issues with it.
Okay. So let's talk a bit about the food sources that are in these tributaries. After we talk about that and some flies, we'll get into some strategies and tactics that you're using out there. So, you know, I keep hearing you talking about crayfish and minnows and larger, you know, baitfish, that kind of stuff. So are those the primary food sources? And, you know, what about other things, insects and so forth?
Yeah. There's a lot of crayfish in these smallmouth waters, and it's such a great piece of protein for these fish, and for the most part it's a pretty easy meal as far as what the fish have to do to get the crayfish. They eat a lot of damselfly nymphs, is a huge part of their diet, a lot of insects, like I said, We see a pretty cool flying ant hatch that goes off, and then those smallmouth will eat those ants like a trout would. And then bait fish, forage fish like that, they have a real aggressive tendency towards, especially in the springtime, we get a lot of fish on like a Murditch minnow, which is an umpqua fly at Bill Murditch designed for stripers on the East Coast. Well, we thought, well, let's use it for smallmouth, and it works great for smallmouth. So that's a lot of what we fish for. The topwater stuff resembles, dying big mayfly it could, or like I said, some sort of terrestrial, like a fat Albert, which would be a Chernobyl-style fly. A lot of foam, a lot of deer hair. So you really, like I said before, you're dealing with instinctive fish, fish that are eating aggressively. They're not necessarily nitpicking the flies like a trout would. And so that's kind of a cool thing about smallmouth is you're throwing out these big bait fish patterns. You're throwing out big poppers and things like that. And those fish, you know, whether it's the color or the way the fly moves in the water, they're attracted towards it. And it's a blast. It's really
fun. So there's really not much in the way of, like, matching the hatch, so to speak, as we would with trout.
You know, not so much. You know, later on in the year when the water, like I said, gets a little low and the fish get a little leader shy, we might start to drop our sizes on the flies, fish a smaller fly, a little bit thinner leader, maybe some 6-pound maxima, fluorocarbon, stuff like that, if the fish are real finicky. But really, you know, it's a matter of if the fish are eating, they're going to eat it. They're going to go for it. And, we stick to maybe, I stick personally to maybe 10 or 12 different patterns throughout the summer, and that's about it. I'm not varying a whole lot. There are some color things, but it's not, for me at least, not a big deal.
Okay, well, let's talk about some of those nymphs that you do use. You mentioned damselfly nymphs. What other nymphs might you use in your collection there?
There might be some smallmouth water occasionally that might have actually some hex nymphs. I know on the Mississippi system, they see a lot of hex flies, and those are big mayflies, and so they'll gorge themselves on that. But for us, those damsel, big blue damselfly nymphs, and if I'm nymphing in the early season, I'm probably either dead drifting a streamer, or dead drifting a crayfish pattern that's weighted, or a clouser minnow that's weighted, and it's just bouncing on the bottom. Because that time of year, ice outs happen, pre-spawn is here, they're aggressively wanting to eat. And I think if presented correctly, a crayfish that's bouncing on the bottom is a little bit more, of a healthy food source than a couple of smaller nymphs for a smallmouth looking to put some weight on.
Yeah.
And, we don't do that a ton, but we do, have to do that once in a while. We put the heavy-weighted flies on and the indicators, and we nymph with A-rate rods. And, you can manipulate the fly a little bit, but you're dead-drifting a lot of stuff, too, looking for that indicator to move subtly like a trout would. And I've caught some nice fish doing that over the years.
Okay. Let's take a quick break, and we'll come back, talk more about the flies that you're using. So hang tight here. Front Range Anglers, a full-service fly shop located in Boulder, Colorado, provides premium tackle and comprehensive instruction and guide services to fly fishers across the country. In business for over 31 years and with a staff that averages 20 years of experience, they will give you the straight story on gear, places to fish, flies, and techniques. They publish a monthly newsletter that is one of the most informative and insightful electronic magazines in the industry. Find out more about this premier shop by logging onto their website at www.frontrangeanglers.com. That's www.frontrangeanglers.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with AJ about drifting for smallmouth bass in Wisconsin tributaries. If you'd like to ask AJ a question, just go to our homepage, askaboutflyfishing.com, and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Okay, so we're talking about nymphs, and you keep coming back to those darn crayfish. I would say that's the go-to fly if we're going to pick one here. What about dry fly activity? And I don't mean topwater attractors. Let's talk about that next. But you know, we would think of as dry flies in the trout world. Is there any reason to use any of those at any time?
You know, the only real comparison in the trout world would be like a Chernobyl ant or a big foam style hopper that you would use out west with a, you know, nymph below it. You know, that in midsummer to late summer, we use a lot of those size, you know, maybe eights or sixes. We've got a lot of those style flies that we tie in the shop that are designated for smallmouth, but are just basically guide flies that we tie that have worked just for our system up here. We use a lot of hard head poppers with marabou off the back, rubber legs, poppers that move a lot of water, and we oftentimes have to dead drift these poppers as well, like you would a dry fly. And so you cast your popper out, you give it one big pull, you move some water, you let the thing sit for 10 or 12 seconds, and through the vibration in the water and the sound that it makes, that smallmouth's attracted to that, and it gives them time to investigate it. And so with people in the boat that are constantly moving the popper, I would say, hey, okay, let's just count to 10 here, let's let that thing sit, and let's see what happens. And oftentimes it's on the 6 or 7 or 8 second count where the fish actually hits the fly. And so for topwater, as far as, you know, matching a hatch, you know, we really stick with that. The only hatch that we really match is a flying ant hatch that happens to come off, at least from my experience. We do see some fish come up and eat damsel flies, but it's, you know, not something that they aggressively do. Every day we see damsels coming off the water, big dragonflies coming off the water. And sometimes they'll eat spent flies, spent patterns that will tie out of foam and deer hair and things like that. We fish, like I said, a lot of bait fish patterns. There's another probably 60 to 70% of what I like to fish. And these bait fish patterns will sit anywhere from 6 to 2 feet under the surface of the water. And you want to fish them like a dead bait fish would be, moving in the water erratically at different speeds, tie them on a loop knot so they hinge really well, and we see a lot of fish go after those. So everything's pretty visible outside of those bottom crayfish, early spring, you know, pre-post-spawn type of rigs.
We have a question from Alan Rupp in Illinois. Okay. This is for top water. When do you prefer a loud popper? And when do you prefer a more quiet river slider style? What are your basic rules for color on top water?
My favorite two colors on top water is a bright yellow and then a darker green with maybe a yellow marabou off the back. We do fish a blue damselfly, hard head popper that it's bright blue, and that fish is pretty good for us all summer. You know, when the water gets low, middle of summer towards August here, the water gets low and the fish start moving off the shelves, I'll throw a little bit smaller slider if I have to. But really, if the fish are on the shelves and they're comfortable and you haven't spooked them, you can throw a hardhead popper up there. And, you know, I've had success doing that. I don't fish a ton of foam sliders. I think, you know, if you're going to fish them slow action. Keep it really slow. You know, a lot of us, you know, trout guys are wired to fish streamers, you know, just cast it to the bank and strip back, big long strips, get the thing moving. Well, in smallmouth sometimes you just got to slow everything down because they investigate things like a trout would. And like I said, when the water gets clear, they're going to get a little spookier and you've got to pay attention to how you're retrieving your flies. So I would stick with the hard head stuff. You know, if those shelves have depth of 3 to 4 feet, which is pretty high, then maybe you could stick with a longer slider with a rabbit strip off the back and maybe a foam head or a deer hair head on it that's going to move a lot of water. And that's a good early season setup as well.
Mm-hmm. We had another question. Well, one of the questions, what are your go-to streamers? And you mentioned Clouser, and what were some of the other ones that you talked about that you like for streamers?
Yep, one of my favorite is the Murdich minnow. It's a fly that was designed by Bill Murdich out east for stripers. And that's been a really productive fly for us over the years. Like I said, tight lines, we tie a lot of our own style bait fish patterns. There's a fly called the Bardo Minnow, which Bart Landwehr designed. He's one of the senior guides at the shop. And that's kind of patterned after the Murdich, but has a little bit more profile. And that's yielded some really nice fish as well over the years. I like to fish the Murdich Wiggler, which is a subsurface fly. And that fly can either be bounced off the bottom or fished higher in the water column. You can attach a sink tip leader to a fly line and fish that deep in the early season. I like that in white and root beer. I fish most of my bait fish patterns just in a natural silver or blue tone color. And it's got silver or pearl flashaboo off the back of the fly that's held up by a bucktail. I think the biggest thing with fishing these flies is the silhouette of the fly. And if that fly loses its shape in the water, it's not going to fish as productive for you. You know,
Alan,
even big... Yeah.
Kind of relating along that profile, Alan Rupp question about, he said, for streamers, there are a few basic shapes to consider, long and skinny, minnow shapes, fathead shapes like sculpins. So what are the 3 to 4 key shapes that you like to imitate?
I think a little bit bigger head, tapered down evenly. You know, like I said, with bait fish patterns, if you look at a lot of your saltwater bait fish flies that are out there, that taper is nice. We add a little bit more bulk to the width of the fly, and so it's actually going to look and move like a dying minnow would. And so if you were to take, say, a 3-inch or 4-inch dying bait fish and match it to our minnows that we tie, they're going to be similar in length, similar in width. And I try to look at a lot of the saltwater stuff and add width to it, basically. And the saltwater flies are great because the profile is good, but when you look at them from down, when you're looking down on them in the water, they're real, real skinny for the most part. And, you know, we wrap a lot of Estaz and chenille in there to make things look a little bit more full as a fly. You know, that's what I would look for. So when you look at that Murdich minnow, which uses Estaz on the front, and it kind of has a nice collar up top, good bucktail off the back, and it's tapered towards the back there. It gets skinnier with a little bit of flashaboo on top. That's the kind of style we want. And for trout guys, we don't fish a lot of that style fly. We're just not used to it. But when you're fishing pike and musky and smallmouth, a lot of that stuff is important. And a lot of flash isn't a bad thing either. And so...
Alan also asked another question that relates to your color choices. He says a lot of the Wisconsin waters are tannic stained.
Yep.
Do you change up color based upon that color of water?
I do occasionally. A lot of the tributaries that we fish, like I mentioned, were tailwaters, actually. And so they're dam controlled, they're flow controlled. You're not having to deal with water clarity changing a ton, unless we get 2 or 3 days of a lot of rain and the water gets a little murky. Like I said, I stick to traditional baitfish colors, your silvers, your whites, your blues. Sometimes I'll fish a chartreuse pattern, like a clouser, a white and a chartreuse pattern in the early season when the water's a little off. The fish can pick that up a little bit. But come, you know, late, pre-spawn, I'm sticking with the standard colors for the most part. Crayfish colors, you can fish black, you can fish your grizzly brown or grizzly orange, and then occasionally a chartreuse tied fly out of rabbit strip or palmered rabbit is really productive with some lead eyes and rubber legs to provide some more visibility.
Okay. A couple questions came in on the internet. Phil in California asks, California, Kentucky, actually.
Okay.
Right, Phil? When do you find that streamers are more effective than topwater offerings for smallmouth in the areas that you fish?
Most of our streamer fishing is going to be in that pre-spawn through post-spawn period. our topwater fishing hasn't really taken off yet just because water temps aren't there yet. Now, that being said, we can still catch fish on top pre-spawn. But percentage-wise, I'm sticking with my bait fish patterns, my streamers in that early season. And as the water warms, the fish get more active, and that's the great time of year to be fishing on top.
Okay. Another question came in from Al Knight in Montello, Wisconsin. He says, I thought that the smallmouth season begins in the middle of June. What are the regs regarding the pre-June fishing?
Well, the river systems are actually open in that early May. And like I said, we'll be on that middle of May. We'll start our pre-spawn fishing. And the post-spawn, we'll run that through middle of June, depending on weather and water temp and what's going on.
So there are no regs prohibiting you from fishing.
Correct. Yep.
Correct. In May. Okay. Yeah. I wouldn't expect that you'd be breaking those laws as a guide service, but just to clear that up. Okay.
Yep.
All right. So that covers the couple of questions we had in there. Let's take one more break, and then we'll come back and talk more about strategies and tactics that you're using.
Great.
Have you ever dreamed about the classic actions of bamboo fly rods? Did you know that it's possible for you to make your own bamboo fly rods? With the help of Power Fibers Online Magazine, you can do just that. Power Fibers is a magazine dedicated to making bamboo fly rods and telling the stories about bamboo through the ages. From rod-making techniques to stories about fishing bamboo rods to rod-maker profiles to classic taper, Power Fibers has it all. Visit their website at www.powerfibers.com. That's www.powerfibers.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with A.J. Dudek about drifting for smallmouth bass in Wisconsin tributaries. So if you'd like to ask A.J. a question, go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com. Use the Q&A text box there to send us your question. Okay, A.J., as I just mentioned in the title of the show, we were talking about drifting as part of the tactics. I am getting a lot of kind of like background noise on you. I don't know if you're moving the phone around a lot or.
Okay. Let me hold it closer here.
Yeah, that went away now. So.
Okay.
So let's talk about your drift trips and how, you know, the strategies behind that. And, you know, I mean, we think about drift trips out west here, but what's it like in Wisconsin? How does it differ? What's your strategy?
For the most part, they're actually really similar to trout trips, meaning that you're fishing to spots. You're fishing to certain areas like you would in a trout scenario. So a trout guide is going to be constantly telling you, hey, make a cast here, try to get a drift there. And smallmouth is the same way. We're target fishing. So in the boat, we're moving at the same rate as the current, which is great. And we're having you cast mainly towards the bank and working the pattern back towards the boat. And since we're fishing more moving patterns like streamers and bait fish and crayfish, you're having to really work the line a lot more than you would trout, where you cast out your dry fly or your indicator and then you let the current kind of move the fly down. We're aggressively moving the fly, unless we're really dead drifting a foam popper or something like that in the middle of the summer. For the most part, we're making our cast and we're wanting you to strip the fly back at different rates, different tempos throughout the day. So that's really, for me, the big difference. I had a good guide buddy of mine from the Colorado Angler, Greg Harrington, come out and fish with me for a couple of days. And he was sore after fishing with me for 3 days. Because it's just a lot of casting and it's a lot of stripping. It's a lot of moving that fly. And for some guys, it takes a little while to kind of get out of trout mode and get into predator mode, or these fish really want to see that fly being moved, and if you figure out the tempo, it can be a blast fishing.
Well, we, I did an interview, well, several interviews with Kelly Gallup, and he's a big, you know, streamer fisherman up there in the Madison, and you had mentioned this earlier, so I thought I'd bring it up, you know, and one of Kelly's tactics is to, you know, drift and hammer those banks, you know, for the big browns up there. But you had said earlier that that's not probably going to work for smallmouth. So how would we change up that tactic?
Well, we do that pretty often. Middle of July, when the water drops and the fish might be moving off the shelf, we might end up fishing center river more. We're working off of the shelf, casting into deeper water, and fish are holding there and feeding on the surface. Early season, we're hitting the banks aggressively. Just because water temperatures are warmer, the post spawns ended, the fish are still up on those ledges and probably will be up on the ledges for another couple of weeks. And so we do utilize that bank technique a lot. And a lot with what Kelly does, we do the same thing. So like the rods he designed, those bank robber rods that St. Croix came out with, those are great rods for smallmouth fishing because they're designed to throw big flies, big lines. And the techniques do overlap for sure. Just depends on the time of year. Where like trout fishing, you know, you can still bank fish all summer long for the most part, unless the trout are real spooky, really weary. But with smallmouth, you know, we're hitting the banks in the early season, and then as the water drops, depending on what sections we're fishing, we'll focus on that center river, look for structure, look for big changes in the current, things like that. And there's a lot of center river riffles that we focus on, too, where fish are going to be holding and waiting for food.
So as the water warms up, they move away from the banks, out more to the deeper water?
Yeah, they can. And sometimes later on in the day, in the evening, they'll move back on the shelves, wait for food, and they'll feed at night up on those shelves and then move back towards those drop-off or big center river grooves, is from what I've experienced.
Okay. You mentioned before that, you know, when you're looking for smallmouth, that use a lot of the same techniques that you would for trout,
yep.
Holding structure areas and so forth. But you just mentioned, you know, like holding off a shelf or something. Can you kind of describe that more thoroughly and the other differences or other ways to look for smallmouth different from trout?
Yep. So, like, in a drifting scenario, if I'm in the boat and we're fishing a shelf, it normally is from the bank to anywhere from 20 to maybe 50, 60, 80 feet off the river, and then all of a sudden you see a visible change in depth. And a lot of these are just big rock ledges, and all of a sudden it drops 3 or 4 feet. And so there's a change not only in depth, but there's a change in water temperature. And sometimes those fish will be holding right off that drop-off. You know, largemouth do that often, too, in a lake scenario. Mm-hmm. And from what I've found, it's just it's a food source area where whether it's crayfish or baitfish or nymphs are coming off that shelf, and those smallmouth can sit right there and have a kind of easy going from a food perspective. And they've got a little bit of cover, too, hanging out in that shelf system. And so that's kind of the visual that looks like. And sometimes these shelves can run for 200, 300, 400 yards of river on either side of the river, and there's a big channel in center river. And those fish will congregate as the water drops, like a trout river would. You know, this time of year as the water drops out west, those fish are going to congregate more towards the center river, waiting in pockets and areas to feed. And so the smallmouth operate the same way. And we'll sight fish, too, on those shelves. Sometimes we'll stand up in the boat, I'll get up on the cooler, and you can see, you know, for long distances on these shelves, and if you've got a good polarized sunglasses, oftentimes you can see shadows moving or if fish are feeding. Sometimes you can see them feeding on the surface subtly, and you'll target fish. So, like, when I used to guide in Colorado, it was a lot of sight fishing.
Right.
Most of those, you know, Rocky Mountain streams or sight fish opportunities, you get in the right position to make the right cast, and chances are you'll get the fish if you can see it. So sometimes smallmouth operate that way too, which is really fun. And we'll throw the anchor down, and we'll just sight fish on a couple of fish that are sitting on a shelf. But that's kind of the visual. I hope that kind of paints you a good picture.
Yeah, no, that helps a lot.
What that looks
helps
like.
A lot. So the second part of my question is, what other ways or places would you look for fish in, you know, differently than trout?
Yep. You know, with trout, sometimes really slow-moving water guys bypass because they think, oh, the trout's not going to be holding in there. And I've been guilty of that, too, where we consider it kind of frog water. Sometimes you'll hear guides say, hey, we're going to just roll through this frog water. Well, in smallmouth fishing, sometimes that's applicable, but there's other times where it's profitable to fish through water that looks that way. And they might be hunkered down on the bottom, but that doesn't mean they don't want to feed or they don't want to eat. Sometimes in that real dark frog water, you know, I've caught the largest pike of the day in water like that. That's great pike water, real murky, not a lot going on, but there's sunken logs, there's sunken trees. You're not seeing much for changes in current on the surface, but there are fish in water like that. And sometimes those big smallmouths sit down in there towards the, you know, mid to late part of the summer. And the water tends to be a little warmer, and so that can be a good thing as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we talked about how your tactics do change from season and,
yep.
and the weather conditions and so forth. What do you do when things are really slow, when they're off the bite? How do you
yep.
change up? What do you do differently?
Sometimes I'll switch colors and switch sizes. And one other thing with at least fishing streamers is changing tempo of retrieve. You know, it's the guy in the front of the boat's been, you know, fishing the same sort of tempo, you know, and we're a couple hours in and there's not much going on. We're going to change the retrieve up dramatically and see if, you know, hey, let's speed it up. Let's really make some big strips. Or we'll slow it way down and let that thing really, really move slowly. Sometimes that can help. But sometimes smallmouth can be tough fish, whether there's a front moving through, our water temps have dropped because of a cooler rain the night before. Sometimes they lock jaw and it's hard to will them into eating. The biggest advice on that, it's a lot like steelhead fishing sometimes where you just got to fish the good water well. And John Hazel, a guide out in Oregon, speaks of that pretty often. He just says sometimes we just got to fish the good water the best way we can and that's all you can do. But I'll first start with changing colors, changing tempo of retrieve. Water depth is a good option as well. You know, in trout fishing, I normally start from fishing bottom on up, bottom of the river up towards the surface. And with smallmouth fishing, you can utilize that same mentality. Because throughout the day, obviously, there's things going on. There's changes in temperature, changes possibly in flow. So that's a good, safe place to start. You know,
I'm trying to find that. Their
yeah.
place in that water column
yeah.
where that temperature range is. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, it's weird with smallmouth sometimes. You'll be floating and you'll catch 10 of them, and then you'll go an hour without catching anything. And sometimes I think they're a little bit migratory in the sense that they kind of school up a little bit and feed in certain areas that are either more productive or the food source is moving. Sometimes those smallmouth can travel 5, 6, maybe 10 miles in a day. So it's not something that we're like a brown trout, you know, he's going to live in that same 200-300-yard stretch of river his whole life for the most part. And you can count on him being there pretty consistently if he's not under a lot of pressure. Where smallmouth,
yeah.
they really do move a lot. And they're looking for that food source pretty consistently.
Well, that was a question Stuart in Chicago had. He says, I've noticed that when fishing tributaries or small feeder streams, that there are times when they seem full of fish and times when I can't find a bite. He says, can you explain
yeah.
this? I have my own theories, but wonder if you have noticed this as well.
Yeah, I think a lot of it for me is the whole food source deal. They're looking for food, and sometimes, you know, they got to travel miles to find what they want to find. And, you know, I don't know if that necessarily has to do with hatches in our smallmouth fishery. I think it has to do more with concentrations of bait fish, you know, nymph patterns, quality holding water for fish, and time of year, too. Where in the spring, the fish are scattered throughout the river. They're really hugged into structure when the water's high. As the water drops, they begin to move into that center river. Yeah, and there are times and seasons where, you know, yeah, we catch 9 or 10 of them. An hour later, we're not moving any fish. And then 2 hours later, we're into another pot of fish. So there are days when that does happen. And
well,
I wish
maybe
I could,
when Stuart's, you know, maybe his situation is like, well, last year I was in this hole and I caught 20, and this year I can't catch a fish. So that could be the whole movement process of where they literally are not there this year, even though it was a good spot. Whereas with trout, we would probably do well again in that same hole year after year.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, a fair bit. Not a whole lot of more predictability, but there is some with the trout, for sure.
Okay.
But you're constantly reading the water, though, like you would in a trout stream. And you're really fishing structure consistently.
Now, do they school up more than trout will? Are they territorial?
They are territorial, but not as territorial as, say, a brown trout would be. You know, when I used to guide up in Rocky Mountain National Park, I could catch the same brown trout almost 3-4 years in a row. I knew where he was. I knew what he looked like, the markings he had, things like that. And, you know, you start kind of naming fish once in a while. Smallmouth, that happens, but it doesn't happen as regularly as trout would. They school up really this time of year as they're getting ready for fall as the water's dropping. They're going to sit in those deeper pockets of water and really start to get ready. Their metabolisms will start to slow down as water temps drop, and then they'll move into winter mode.
If you could give several do's and don'ts when smallmouth fishing as a guide, what would you say to people out there fishing? The mistakes you see, you know, maybe more often than not.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing with, and then maybe I'll start with the two most defined ways that I fish, with the poppers and then with our bait fish patterns. The biggest mistake I see with bait fish or streamer patterns is the inability to change tempo, or kind of lazy retrieves. And guys can get into that rut a little bit. And, you know, there's some guys that kind of get it, and there's some guys where you got to really work with them and say, hey, I really need you to move that fly a little bit more erratically because you're going to catch more fish doing that. If you're stripping back the same tempo every cast, every time, the fish aren't as cued into that. And I learned that early on in fishing smallmouth is slowing things down a little bit, really getting that fly to move erratically, pausing once in a while really helps. And a lot of times those fish will eat on the pause when the fly starts to sink a little bit or move differently really slowly. That's when they actually hit it. And with poppers, the biggest mistake we see is the fly hits the water, and then it's pop, 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 pop all the way back to the boat. And we don't want to do that. We want to make that cast out there. It hits the water. Let it sit for about 10 seconds before you move it. Give it one good pop, you know, maybe, I don't know, 20 inches of movement. Pretend like you're putting your left hand in your left pocket if you're stripping with your left. And let it sit again for 7 or 8 seconds. And oftentimes those fish will hit that popper when it's sitting there for 3, 4, 8 seconds. It kind of just depends on the day. Sometimes it hits the water and boom, they hit it. But oftentimes we got to be a little crafty in the way that we present the flies.
Okay. Question just came in from Phil again. He says, in northern Minnesota's Boundary Water Canoe area, he says he uses leech flies a lot to catch smallmouth in the lakes near Ely.
Yes.
He says, do you find leech patterns work well in your waters?
They can, big conehead leeches. Some of the slump buster flies that we tie kind of resemble that movement. You know, a lot of those leeches are tied either with marabou off the back end or big magnum strip, rabbit strips. Those are productive because you're looking for that pulsing type movement. Now, those leeches, like up in the Quidico Boundary Waters side, the water temps up there are a little bit colder than what we're used to fishing. But as their season grows, you know, we do fish stuff like that, but I stick with the crayfish and the baitfish because I don't see a lot of natural leeches in our systems. In some of the lakes, we'll fish, you know, smallmouth will eat those, largemouth will eat them, but we don't see a ton of them in the river systems that I've been on.
Okay. And, you know, we've talked about crayfish all night, but I don't think you mentioned patterns for crayfish or techniques for fishing crayfish. If you did, I missed it, but can you kind of run through how you work crayfish?
Yep. You know, there's a ton of crayfish patterns out there that are productive. John Barr ties some of them. One of my favorite is actually a signature fly that tight lines came up with probably 10 years ago now. Tim Landwehr designed it. It's called Tim's Muppet. And it's basically lead eyes on a 8089 TMC hook, and it's got a palmered rabbit in a dubbing loop and rubber legs. So it's really, when it's wet, when it's moving, that rabbit strip and the front end of that fly really pulses well. And so how we fish that basically is you're fishing it on a 10-foot or even 12-foot leader. You make your cast out. You let that fly sink as it should with those lead eyes, and you're retrieving it back at different rates. Because when you see a crayfish move in the water, it kind of pops up, it goes down. It pops up, it goes down. So you're working it up, you know, through the water column, letting it go back down towards the bottom. And some days you retrieve it quicker. Some days you move it very, very slowly. Now, you can fish that with a standard leader or a sink tip with maybe 2 feet to 3 feet of mono off that sink tip. Can be really, really good as well.
Okay.
You know, anything with rabbit, palmered rabbit or dubbing looped rabbit is going to really look natural. A lot of the South Platte River crayfish patterns that guys use for carp can be great smallmouth patterns. I've caught them on the South Platte there in Denver, kind of near REI for smallmouth. And I've used those crayfish patterns as well that are really, really good.
And are you, so kind you're of working that off the bottom?
I'm bouncing it off the bottom. And that's kind of my big bottom go-to fly, that and that, you know, we call it a Menominee minnow, but it's basically a clouser. And that sometimes has action like a crayfish would as well. It's a bottom type fly. It's meant to ride on the bottom, meant to kind of bounce off the bottom of the river. And then your bait fish patterns are going to ride another 6 or 8 feet up from there when the water's high. I don't fish a ton of crayfish patterns come mid-July because our bait fish and popper season is really hot and heavy, and we kind of prefer that just because the takes are so visual, and it's honestly more enjoyable, I think. So I like, you know, trout guys would rather fish dry for the most part than an infrared if they had a choice.
Yeah, of course.
You know.
Okay, good. Well, yeah. I think we've given this a good run for the money here, and let's
Absolutely.
Wrap it up. And we'll just everybody stay with me a few more minutes. We're going to give away the membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and also a one-year subscription to Fly Fishing and Tying Journal. We're also going to be giving away that $25 gift certificate courtesy of Front Range Anglers if you get the question right. So we'll have that question coming right up here in just a minute. So, so AJ, stick with me here because if you help me with the questions, and we'll finish things up.
You bet.
Family Ties, that's T-Y-E-S. Family Ties is an organization which uses a shared interest in fly fishing and fly tying to enhance youth development and family relationships. They utilize resources in schools, communities, businesses, and invite your participation. Go to their website, www.familyties.com. That's familyties.com. Family Ties, where every fish is a trophy and every kid is a hero. Just a quick reminder to everyone before you leave the website tonight is please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find a link on our homepage in the section under tonight's show that says, what did you think of the show? Just click on the link and leave us your comments. We'd really appreciate it. Now it's time to give away our prizes. The winners for our drawings are randomly selected from our show's registration database. If you didn't register for tonight's show, it's too late now, but make sure you do so for our next show. So you don't miss out on a chance at some of these incredible prizes we have to offer. If you are the lucky winner, we'll contact you after the show and provide you with information on how to receive your prize. So the first thing we're giving away is a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers. If you're not familiar with the Federation, go to fedflyfishers.org. fedflyfishers.org. They're an international organization, support both cold and warm water and saltwater fisheries, and do a lot for our environment. And our winner for that is John Robbie in Ohio. So congratulations, John. And yeah, I'm sure you'll enjoy your membership. If you do have a membership, let us know and we'll get it extended for you. And our next giveaway is a one-year subscription to Fly Fishing and Tying Journal, which you can learn more about at AmatoBooks.com, as well as all the great books and publications Amato publishes. So check them out, AmatoBooks.com. And our winner for that is Lanford Pritchett in Colorado. So, Lanford, your name sounds familiar to me, so I know you're a longtime listener, so congratulations on winning that that subscription, so I'm sure you'll enjoy it. Okay, terrific. Now let's do this question, and my question tonight is, AJ had, let me get to it here, AJ had said that one of the great times to fish was pre and post spawn. When does a pre-spawn start happening? What month? And what's the range of water temperatures? What month and what are the range of water temperatures? So it's a two-part question. So go ahead and give me your answers. And John was on the line, so he says, "Woo woo, I'm a winner." Yeah, good for you, John. Good for you. And let's see. It's nice to win stuff. So, John, you can win twice. All you have to do is answer the question. Okay. We have an answer. He says May and 50 to 60 range. Is that good enough?
Yes, that will suffice. A lot of kind of even early 60s can be really, really good.
Okay. Yeah, I think you had said mid-50s to low 60s. So we'll
correct.
Give that to Dale Scala, Durham, North Carolina. So congratulations, Dale. And, Dale, what you'll need to do is in that same box where you answered the question, please send me your I have your email address, so I got that. I just need your mailing address, and we'll get you fixed up with that $25 gift certificate from Front Range Anglers. So I know it's a long way off, but you can redeem it online as well, so take advantage of that. So great. Well, congratulations to everyone, and thanks for playing, and thanks for listening carefully. AJ, it's great to have you on the show. Thanks for being with us and taking your time out of your busy day to spend time with us. We always appreciate it, and thanks for your great knowledge. Yeah, so good to have you.
Oh, anytime. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Hopefully, you've all found the archive on our website. If you haven't, there's a couple of links to it on our homepage and links at the bottom of every page. In the archive, you'll find over 190 shows now. I think we're really getting close. If this wasn't the one, we're really close to 200. You can search by keyword phrase, like trout, tarpon, Madison River, smallmouth, whatever you'd like, and explore it. You're going to find a lot of great shows we've done with a lot of great people in the industry, so enjoy. Our next broadcast will be on September 17th, 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. We're going to be interviewing Jason Randall, and our topic for the show will be trout sense. Jason will share with us what trout see and hear and smell under the water. And, you know, the more you know about trout, the more fish you'll catch. So listen in to learn about what's going on under the water for the trout. We'd like to thank the Federation of Fly Fishers, Amato Books, Platte River Fly Shop, Front Range Anglers, Housatonic River Outfitters, and Power Fibers Online Magazine for sponsoring our show tonight. If you think your company would benefit from sponsoring one of our shows, give us a call at 1-800-985-1673. That's 1-800-985-1673, and we'll be happy to explain the options available to you. Don't forget to visit our website, askaboutflyfishing.com. Make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.